Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Accenture's first quarter and full year fiscal 2009 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one. You would hear a tone indicating you have been placed in queue, and you may remove yourself at any time by pressing the pound key. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. And as a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Managing Director of Investor Relations, Richard Clark. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. And thanks, everyone, for joining us today on our first quarter fiscal 2009 earnings announcement. As the Operator just mentioned, I'm Richard Clark, Managing Director of Investor Relations. With me this afternoon are Bill Green, our Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Pamela Craig, our Chief Financial Officer, and Steve Rohleder, our Chief Operating Officer. We hope you've had an opportunity to review the news release we issued a short time ago. Let me quickly outline the agenda for today's call. Bill will begin with an overview of our results. Pam will take you through the financial details, including the income statement and balance sheet, and Steve will add some operational perspective. Pam will then provide our business outlook for the second quarter and the full fiscal year 2009, and Bill will close the presentation before we take your questions. As a reminder, when we discuss revenues during today's call, we're talking about revenues before reimbursements or net revenues. Some of the matters we'll discuss on this call are forward-looking, and you should keep in mind that these forward-looking statements are subject to known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed or implied by such statements. Such risks and uncertainties include, but are not limited to, general economic conditions and those factors set forth in today's news release and discussed under the Risk Factors section of our annual report on Form 10-K and other SEC filings. During our call today, we will reference certain non-GAAP financial measures, which we believe provide useful information for investors. You can find reconciliation of those measures to GAAP on the Investor Relations section of our website at Accenture.com. As always, Accenture assumes no obligation to update the information presented on this conference call. Now, let me turn the call over to Bill.
Thank you, Richard, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We had a strong first quarter and are off to a good start for our fiscal year 2009. In the face of a very uncertain market for everyone, we not only delivered strong revenue growth, but we brought it right to the bottom line. We are seeing changing demand patterns, but overall, the market for Accenture services is very active, and we are very positive about the business broadly, from the way we're managing and executing to the game-changing opportunities that we are engaged in right now. Here are some highlights from the quarter. We delivered strong revenues of $6 billion, an increase of 9% in local currency, which is a considerable accomplishment in this market. We grew EPS by 24%. We expanded operating margin by 70 basis points, reflecting our focus on operating discipline and strict cost management. We delivered bookings of $5.8 billion, with consulting bookings a strong $3.6 billion. In addition, throughout the quarter, we continued to invest in our business, in skills, assets, and offerings, and we continued to attract new clients and gain market share. We have shown the flexibility to respond quickly in this market. Our operating model makes us nimble, so we can focus our resources where they're needed and efficiently manage supply and demand. We are working with clients across a wide spectrum of assignments, from improvements in quality, cost, speed, and customer service, to in-depth strategic direction, from being at the core of the transformation of our clients' operating models, to being at the core of the reinvention of entire industries. We are executing well, we are focused on results, we are determined to win. Now I'll turn the call over to Pam, who will provide more detail on our financial.
Thank you, Bill. Happy holidays to you all, and thanks for listening today. I am pleased to tell you more about our excellent results in the first quarter of fiscal 2009. Despite the challenging macro environment, we produced strong revenues, operating margin, cash flow, and earnings. Let me take you through some detail behind the numbers in our income statement, balance sheet, and cash flow. Unless I state otherwise, all figures are U.S. GAAP, except the items that are not part of the financial statements or that are calculations. Net revenues for the first quarter were $6 billion, an increase of 6% in U.S. dollars and 9% in local currency over the period last year. We had solid revenue generation for the quarter, coming in at the low end of our previously guided full-year range of 9 to 12%. I should note that Q1 net revenues reflected a foreign exchange impact of negative 3%. Our previously guided range of $6.15 to $6.35 billion assumed an FX impact of negative 1% to positive 1%. If we adjust for the actual FX impact, our guided range for the quarter would have been $5.9 to $6.2 billion. Our revenues of $6.0 billion were solidly in this range. Consulting revenues were $3.7 billion, an increase of 6% in U.S. dollars and 9% in local currency. Outsourcing revenues were $2.4 billion, an increase of 7% in U.S. dollars and 9% in local currency. Moving down the income statement, gross margin was 31.4%, up from 30.1%, a 130 basis point improvement over last year's first quarter. SG&A costs for the first quarter were $1.1 billion, or 17.8% of net revenues, compared with $970 million, or 17.1% of net revenues for the first quarter last year. Operating income for the quarter increased 12% to $815 million, reflecting a 13.5% operating margin. That is a 70 basis point improvement over last year's first quarter. I am very pleased with how we delivered operating margin this quarter compared to last year. So let me provide some detail. First, we drove a 130 basis point expansion in gross margin by improving contract profitability and at the same time absorbing the annual salary increases we put in place September 1st. This was an outstanding result. Second, sales and marketing costs increased approximately 20 basis points compared to Q1 of last year. We were also pleased with this result as we continued to drive new bookings and qualify new opportunities coming into the pipeline. Lastly, general and administrative expenses for the quarter were 8.4% of net revenues. Included in G&A costs for this quarter was a provision we made for bad debt of $72 million, a 120 basis point impact. We booked this provision because we felt it was prudent, given the uncertainty in the current environment. Without it, G&A expenses for the quarter would have been 7.2% of net revenues. Absent the bad debt provision, SG&A would have improved by 50 basis points. G&A would have improved by 70 basis points, and operating margin would have improved by 190 basis points over last year's first quarter. This is a clear indication that we are showing discipline in managing our costs in both local currency and U.S. dollars to drive profitability in our business. Our effective tax rate for the quarter was 26.6%, below our previously guided annual range of 30 to 32%. Final determinations reduced our tax rate in the quarter by approximately 4% and provided a benefit of 4 cents to earnings per share. Income before minority interest for the quarter was $593 million, compared with $506 million for the first quarter last year, an increase of 17%. Diluted earnings per share were 74 cents, an increase of 24% over diluted EPS of 60 cents in the first quarter last year. We delivered an increase of 20 cents, or 33% growth, from strong operating performance, including 8 cents from revenue and operating income growth in local currency, 8 cents from a lower tax rate, including the 4 cents I just mentioned, and 4 cents from a lower share count. This was partially offset by a total of 6 cents, comprising 4 cents due to lower non-operating items, including lower interest income, and $0.02 unfavorable FX impact in our Q1 operating results compared to last year. The earnings performance is quite outstanding, given that EPS rose $0.14 or 24%, despite the headwinds in non-operating type items. Now, let's turn to some key parts of our cash flow and balance sheet. Free cash flow for the quarter was very strong, $396 million, resulting from cash generated by operating activities of $468 million, net of property and equipment additions of $72 million. First quarter free cash flow was driven by our strong net income performance and holding the line on DSOs. Turning to DSOs, our days services outstanding were 36 days, down one day from the last quarter in fiscal 2008. The bad debt reserve I previously mentioned reduced DSOs by about a day. With flat DSOs in this environment, we continue to believe that our DSO levels are strong and industry-leading. Our total cash balance at November 30th of $2.78 billion versus $3.60 billion at the end of August reflects a $300 million reduction due to foreign exchange translation on the cash balances we hold around the world. In addition, our strong free cash flow I just mentioned was more than offset this quarter by the cash we returned to shareholders through repurchases and dividends. We continue to invest our cash conservatively in liquid overnight time deposits and U.S. Treasury repurchase agreements. Total debt at November 30th was $2 million, compared with $8 million at August 31st. Our balance sheet metrics remain strong. For the first quarter, our return on invested capital was 84%, our return on equity was 85%, and our return on assets was 21%. Before I turn things over to Steve, I will comment on our ongoing objective to return cash to shareholders through share repurchases and dividends. During the quarter, we repurchased or redeemed 21.8 million shares for $690 million, including $431 million for approximately 14 million shares repurchased in the open market. The average price of shares repurchased and redeemed in the quarter was $31.62 a share. We increased the level of open market repurchases as there was lower selling demand by our founders, and we found the market prices to be attractive. At November 30th, we had $1.9 billion of share repurchases authority remaining. Also in November, we paid our fourth annual cash dividend to Accenture Limited Class A and Accenture SCA Class 1 common shareholders. The dividend payment of $0.50 per share was $0.08 more than the dividend we paid last year, representing an increase of 19% for a total of $378 million. Finally, let me comment on the size of our public float. Using what we believe to be the most conservative method of calculation, our public float at the end of the quarter was approximately 75%, which excludes all outstanding founder shares. In sum, it was a well-executed quarter. I'm very pleased with the hard work and focus that our people collectively demonstrated in driving such strong results. Now Steve will give you some detail on our operations.
Thanks, Pam. Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. We delivered strong first quarter results reflecting our continued ability to drive demand for our business, as well as strong operating discipline. Let me first take you through some of the highlights for the operating groups and geographic regions. I'll cover some of the trends we're seeing in our growth platforms and update a few of our operational metrics. All five operating groups achieved revenue growth in local currency. Resources had the highest overall growth, 16% in U.S. dollars and 20% in local currency, driven by strong consulting growth across all geographic regions in natural resources, utilities, and energy. We also saw solid outsourcing growth in the Americas in utilities, chemicals, and natural resources. Our public service operating group grew revenues by 7% in U.S. dollars and 11% in local currency. Last quarter, I mentioned that we were focusing on improving profitability in public service, and I'm pleased to report that we saw a sequential uptick in Q1 with growth in both operating income and improved operating margin. I know there's a continued interest in our financial services business, and in Q1, financial services revenues were flat in U.S. dollars but increased 2% in local currency. We delivered solid growth in both insurance and banking in the Americas and Asia Pacific. While we did experience slower overall growth than in past quarters, we're fortunate that many of our key clients are playing a major role in reshaping the industry. This, in turn, is driving continued demand for our services around mergers and acquisitions, cost reduction, and finance transformation. Looking at the quarter from a geographic perspective, Q1 revenues in the Americas grew 11% in U.S. dollars and 12% in local currency, with strong growth in the U.S. and Brazil. In EMEA, revenues were flat in U.S. dollars, but grew 4% in local currency. We had strong growth in the Netherlands, with growth moderating in France, Germany, Italy, and Spain. Growth in EMEA was negatively affected by a decline in the U.K. We have a number of initiatives in place to improve our U.K. performance, but expect it will take the remainder of the fiscal year to see the full effect of these initiatives. Once again, Asia Pacific turned in outstanding results, with revenue growth of 22% in U.S. dollars and 25% in local currency, led by Japan, Singapore, and China. Turning to our growth platforms, we're seeing demand in a number of areas, but I'd like to highlight three that are particularly relevant in today's business environment: operational excellence, rapid and sustained cost management, and M&A execution. Let me tell you how these three trends are driving demand in our growth platforms. In management consulting, we're helping clients develop and execute their strategies in order to drive new sources of growth, optimize processes, and balance costs. The broad operational excellence trend is driving demand for finance and performance management and supply chain optimization, as well as for our new process and innovation performance service line. Clients are turning to outsourcing to meet the demand for rapid cost savings. I'm excited by the increased interest in BPO with an emphasis on back office cost improvement opportunities. In addition, demand for application outsourcing remains strong. In systems integration and technology, we're seeing increased demand around services to improve IT effectiveness, as well as momentum in post-merger integration across all operating groups and geographies. Finally, let me touch on a few operational metrics. We continue to expand the capabilities of our global delivery network, ending the quarter with 83,000 people, up 10% from the first quarter in 2008. Bookings for the quarter were $5.8 billion, and our investment in industry skills, assets, and differentiation continues to pay off as we achieved consulting bookings of $3.6 billion. This made Q1 our eighth straight quarter of consulting bookings in excess of $3 billion. Outsourcing bookings were $2.2 billion. As you know, our bookings vary from quarter to quarter, and I'm excited by the increased interest and activity levels in outsourcing as clients focus on immediate cost and service improvement opportunities. Now let me turn to people management. We ended the quarter with more than 187,000 employees, an increase of 7% over Q1 last year. Utilization for the quarter was 83%, and attrition was down significantly to 13%. Finally, I'd like to comment on three of our most important operational priorities. In this uncertain environment, managing supply and demand of our resources remains a top priority, and we'll continue to take steps to ensure that we have the proper balance of skills in each market. Second, we continue our focus on improving SG&A. Prior to Q1, we took a number of steps to ensure that our G&A costs did not outpace our revenue growth. I was extremely pleased that, absent the provision for bad debt, we saw a 50 basis point improvement in SG&A for the quarter. Third, we're on a multi-year journey to improve our cost structure, including both labor and non-labor costs. We're optimizing our mix of resources, including subcontractors, and continuing to consolidate major purchases through our procurement function. These actions will drive profitability regardless of the business environment. So just to summarize, we're off to a great start in fiscal 2009. We delivered strong revenue growth and outstanding bottom line results this quarter in a challenging economic environment. We have our hands on all of the operating levers of our business, giving us the flexibility to adjust quickly to changing conditions, and we continue to drive demand and see plenty of opportunity in the market. With that, let me turn it back to Pam for our business outlook.
Thank you, Steve. As a reminder, each quarter we provide an outlook for the next quarter's revenue and an update on our annual outlook for the full fiscal year, and we will continue to do so. For the second quarter, we expect revenues to be in the range of $5.45 billion-$5.65 billion, which assumes a foreign exchange drag of approximately 8%-10%. As you all are well aware, currency movements recently have been quite volatile. This range reflects December's assumed rate of approximately -11% and our latest assumption for currency movement, given that the U.S. dollar is currently weakening. Now, turning to the full fiscal year, let me first give you the context of how we are thinking about the impact of FX on our full fiscal year results. When I spoke last quarter about the impact foreign exchange would have on our fiscal 2009 outlook, we assumed a -2% to -4% headwind based on exchange rates experienced during the month of September. At this time, we have reset our annual outlook given the actual Q1 results and our new assumption based on exchange rates experienced during the month of December so far. So we therefore now assume the FX impact for the remaining three quarters of fiscal year 2009 to be in the range of -8% to -10%, which, as I just mentioned, is also the range we are assuming for the second quarter. This current foreign exchange assumption has been factored into our outlook for bookings, earnings per share, and cash flow. For some time now, we've communicated that our business can grow at 9%-12% in local currency. We stated this last quarter, and our management team continues to believe this and remains committed to driving the business to this goal. We continue to see strong demand for our services and feel good about the future business we see. However, given the uncertainty, our assessment of what is going on, and the 9% local currency growth in the first quarter, we feel it is prudent to modestly adjust our fiscal year 2009 revenue outlook to 6%-10% in local currency. Let me next cover operating margin. We now expect a further expansion of operating margin this fiscal year to a range of 13.4%-13.7%, a 50 to 80 basis point expansion over last year. We have done this based on the strength of our Q1 results and our expectation that we will continue to effectively manage costs and contract profitability. You should expect some fluctuations quarter to quarter as we have seen in the past. So, taking into account the different foreign exchange assumption and the expected revenue growth for the fiscal year, we now expect new bookings to be in the range of $24 billion-$27 billion. We now expect earnings per share to be in a range of $2.78-$2.85, and we now expect operating cash flow to be in the range of $2.8 billion-$3.0 billion, property and equipment additions to be $370 million, and free cash flow to be in the range of $2.4 billion-$2.6 billion. Finally, we now expect our annual effective tax rate to be in the range of 29%-31%, a decrease of one percentage point from our previously communicated range. Our first quarter results reflect those of a well-managed business in a highly dynamic environment. Our clients are facing challenges they have never seen before, and I believe we are well positioned to help them successfully take on some of those challenges. We continue to focus on profitable growth and positioning for the future across our portfolio of businesses. So here is Bill to close before we take your questions.
Thank you, Pam. And let me recap quickly before we go to your questions. First of all, we're very pleased with our strong performance in the first quarter. We are closely managing the business as we said we would, and we are executing well against our plans. Despite economic and FX headwinds, our consistent operating discipline and our ability to adjust quickly to the market conditions enabled us to significantly improve operating margin and deliver a 24% increase in EPS. We generated strong cash flow, and our balance sheet remains rock solid. We continue to win new clients and to expand our relationship with existing clients. While we are closely monitoring the current environment, we continue to invest in the business and take steps to put more distance between ourselves and our competitors. Our first quarter results clearly demonstrate both our relative resistance to the economic turmoil and our tremendous operational discipline, which is not only helping us navigate the downturn, but will also make us even stronger when market conditions improve. Now let's go ahead and open it up for your questions.
Thank you. Once again, if you do have a question, please press star then one. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. One moment please for our first question. We do have a question from Tien-Tsin Huang, JPMorgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Nice work on the margins and defending the earnings. I guess I'll ask about the new outlook on local currency growth. Can you be a little bit more specific on what drove the decision to moderate that outlook and what might push you to the low end of the new outlook? Because the results and the bookings don't seem to suggest you're heading down the path to 6%, but just want to make sure.
Yeah, let me start, and then this is Bill, and then I'll have Pam draft in. We've done a lot of sort of analysis and analytics behind all this. I think as Pam said in her comments, the 9% in the first quarter was something that just made us want to be thoughtful and cautious. That said, if you stand back and look at it, we are driving our business and our operating groups are driving the business to our original range that we said. We continue to see a lot of activity in the marketplace, although different activity. We've been in a very interesting quarter for us because we call it internally sort of the deer in the headlights quarter, where as the economy started to impact more and more companies, people took a pause. Now we're seeing that sort of break free, but we just thought in terms of being prudent and thoughtful that we'd make that adjustment. We continue to drive our business to actually our original range.
Yeah, I'll just add a little bit there. I know you asked about the 6%. As you saw, the first quarter came in at 9%. I would say that from what I thought it would be, that was just a little bit short, less than 1% short of what I was expecting. Given that 9%, given the continued uncertainty about the environment, the 6 really reflects that, right? That there's just a little bit more uncertainty in the medium term, even though our visibility now, just like it was last quarter, is very comparable to what it was last year in terms of the forward look on our business.
Okay, good. Seems prudent. Just a couple quick housekeeping ones. Your new bookings forecast, how much of that was influenced by foreign currencies or anything unusual that we might want to expect in the February quarter bookings given the recent volatility?
Well, the foreign currency drag in the bookings in the first quarter was about 4%.
Okay.
Versus last year, if that's your question.
Right. Also prospectively for this new outlook, I'm assuming that's also reflecting a similar currency impact as you called out on the revenue line?
Yeah. The foreign currency, our bookings in terms of local currency over the 24-27, and if you do the 8-10 on that and factor in the first quarter, it's roughly flat to 11%.
Okay, got it. Last one from me. Just again, just anything unusual we should consider in the February quarter bookings based on what you've seen so far? Thank you.
No, we've seen good activity in December, but we don't really comment about the next quarter until we get to February.
Got it. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Jason Kupferberg, UBS. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Hey, Jason.
Hi, Jason.
So we're going to start with-
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. I wanted to ask a question kind of following up on Tien-Tsin's question. I know you guys tend to do a lot of rigorous bottom-up in shaping your outlook by vertical, by geography, et cetera. The the softening of the constant currency outlook, can you attribute it to any one geography or vertical or service line more than others? Any color there?
No, Jason, this is Steve. No, I wouldn't say we'd attribute it to any single vertical or line of business that we have. As Pam said, once we looked at the entire portfolio of businesses, we felt like it was prudent to adjust. You know, that said, we're seeing, the one area that I'm excited about, and you didn't ask about bookings and outsourcing, but I'll tell you anyway, I see a lot of activity in outsourcing, and I think we're going to continue to push there. But there's not one single, to answer your question directly, there's not one single area.
Okay. No, let me just draft in on that, because we spent a lot of time on this. And, frankly, when you stand back and look at it, for instance, one of the things I am most excited about right now is our financial services business. Now, if you stand back and look at it, you say that we're relatively flat. But the nature of the work we're doing is at the heart and soul of the winning companies. And this entire industry is in the middle of a transformation, or I guess at the beginning of a transformation. And so the thing that, gets us excited is there's lots of activity out there, but we're going through a transition from the things that we used to do to the things that companies need to be done now. And so, we see all this activity. And as Pam said, our visibility is the same. It's just the marketplace that you're looking at, continues to jump around a lot. But on balance, we feel very good about the business in terms of what we did this quarter and in terms of looking ahead. And as I said at the beginning, we continue to drive it, to our original range in terms of the plans that we put out there and the goals we set for our team.
Okay. And maybe just a follow-up for the team. Billy, I think you made a comment about you had that deer in headlights feeling among a lot of your clients during Q1, and there was a pause in decision-making. And then I think you said something to the effect of kind of breaking free out of that. Can you put some more color around that? Is that more since the month in December began? Is some of that year-end driven, clients thinking about doing stuff before 09 kicks off? Or, anything that has incrementally made you feel more comfortable since the analyst meeting, perhaps?
No, it's not 09 related, and it's very specific to an individual company, because if you track this thing for 6 months, there was a time when the other guys had the disease and your company didn't, and then all of a sudden, as this thing crept into retail and certain consumer products and other spaces, people said, "Whoa, this downturn is a lot more serious than we thought it was going to be." So then people sit there and they ask themselves, how is this going to affect us? Are we doing the right things? And should we change course? And so, what that causes is people to rethink the mix of work. They rethink, delaying some things, but they also rethink accelerating some things that they'd had on slow boil, if you will, that they now need to focus on. And I think Steve mentioned the outsourcing velocity and the activity out there. Is just one example of, this period of time where everyone probably just sat back and said, how is this thing going to affect me? And what are the things that I need to be doing for my company in order to do the right thing as leadership? And so that's been the thing. And I would tell you, it's sort of a company by company process that everyone has been going through.
Right. And just last question on the margins. Obviously encouraging to see the outlook there increasing. Can you talk a little more specifically about some of the levers you're pulling at the gross margin and the SG&A line, the visibility on those levers, and is the stronger dollar helping out the margins a little bit?
Yeah, Jason, let me talk about SG&A and just give you some sense there. Back in August, we actually started putting some of these initiatives in place to clamp down on spending, specifically to impact our G&A results. And so we've got those in place through Q1. We're going to continue those things. That's one lever. We're continuing to push utilization. That's another lever. And frankly, in this quarter, we saw a positive impact in terms of our contract profitability and execution on our contracts. So we're going to, again, focus on continuing that trend. Those are three big levers right there.
Just to build a little bit more on the contract side, which is where we saw the strong lift in gross margin, is that we did a very strong job absorbing salary increases this year. And also, we have a program to improve our outsourcing profitability, and that is really kicking in. So I just want to note those things as well.
Very helpful. Thanks, guys.
Okay, now next question comes from George Price, Stifel Nicolaus. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much. First of all, congratulations on some very good results in a very tough environment. Wanted to follow up on a couple of things. First, Pam, just on the operating margin side, you just mentioned gross margin benefit from a particular contract. Was there anything one time in that, or is that sort of something sustainable? I guess that we can see going forward.
No, I mean, when I said contract, I meant contract margins across the tens of thousands that we have, right? I mean, it's really an across-the-board thing, and the outsourcing contract profitability is really across the whole portfolio, which is quite large. So there really isn't anything there except that, I mean, I think you've maybe heard me in the past say I'll never give up on margins, and I think we have a culture here to really drive that over time. So there's nothing unique or to be called out in these results.
Okay, and just on the since you touched on the margin philosophy, at the analyst day, you definitely took a stance about we're not going to manage margins too much to offset the currency, right? Because you don't want to manage the business to currency, right? But we are seeing margins move up. Does that put anything at risk in terms of investment or shifting around your services in this shifting environment now that we are pushing margin higher?
Well, I think there's a natural belt tightening that occurs in this environment. I'm sure you see it in your own company, right? I mean, that's just natural, and we're obviously being very careful that we still make the kinds of investments that we need to make to position the business for the future, and so that balance is very important. But the program to improve, for example, the outsourcing margins, that's been in place for some time, and it's really starting to kick in and yield.
Okay, and one more thing on the cash balance. Can you give us a sense of maybe where the how your cash is dispersed given the $300 million FX impact, and just so we can maybe have a sense of what to expect going forward on how the cash balance is going to move around?
Well, yeah, I mean, as you might imagine, right, we have a business that's roughly a third in the U.S. You have quite a large euro business, right, probably almost as big as the U.S., the British pound. Our yen business is not huge, but, I mean, we have operations all over the world, and we have cash where we need it.
I mean, is it roughly comparable with revenue?
Where we hold the cash?
Yeah.
It would probably be, well, I mean, certainly for the big ones, yeah.
Okay.
Other places where we sweep.
Okay. Last question. Just, Steve, you mentioned the U.K. You have a plan in place. Obviously, there's a lot of, the U.K. is in a lot of macro turmoil, probably worse than most places even here. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned that it'll take the rest of fiscal 9 to implement. How much worse does the U.K. get from here? What's your sense of how you move through fiscal 09 and how you perform in the UK?
Well,
what is your plan? I guess a little bit more detail.
Yeah, I mean, the plan is really a two-prong approach. First of all, to make sure that we can at least tactically, and we did, and we have balanced supply and demand in the current situation. In parallel to that, what we're doing is we've got focus programs in place across all five of our operating units to drive demand generation. And, we, as Bill kind of mentioned, we have to shift our focus from what has been in demand in the past to what is relevant to the current environment. And we're in the process right now of going after targeted clients, expanding our relationship at our existing clients, and basically generating demand. That's just going to take some time.
Yeah, this is Bill. I would just add, I mean, first of all, we don't expect the U.K. to get worse, right? We're just... It's a big piece of our business. There's thousands of people there, lots of client relationships, and so there's a lot of moving parts. And I think, broadly, just to the other questions, we said last quarter and we said a year ago this time that, we had our hands on the levers and we were going to work hard to make sure that we defended our economic results. And I think you see the effect of that right now. So we've been on top of the UK for some time, and that's going to yield in an important way. And I think the other things you see in terms of our results are just a matter of, you know, taking advantage of some of those levers to make sure we delivered respectable results. And that's what I think we've done here.
Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, George.
Thank you, George.
Okay, and our next question comes from Rod Bourgeois, Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hey there. So you're lowering the local currency revenue growth guidance by 2 to 3 points, probably widely expected on that front. I've been trying to break down the changes in the growth outlooks into adjustments for issues that are currently already known and also adjustments for unknowable issues that might very well occur going forward. And since you've got 3 quarters left in the year, it's probably worth accounting for the unknowables here. So I'm wondering if you can break your 2 to 3 points of changed guidance into factors that are known versus maybe a bucket of factors that are unknowables, where you're maybe adding a little bit of buffer for the unknowable. Can you break it into those two categories for us?
We're sort of pointing at each other because we've been having some fun with this the last couple of days. And I have people that bet their badges on different amounts of things. I mean, I think, you know, if you stand back and look at it, you know, to be in the low end and or worse. You know, we were trying to say, like, what would have to happen. And, you know, we were using words like natural disaster. And so just to be perfectly honest about it, right, I mean, there's a lot of our business that, you know, we can see and that we're operating, and then we have a lot of confidence in our ability to use the levers. It's just that, you know, every week, and I think everyone knows this, there's a new surprise. And given an environment where every week there's a new surprise, you know, we just thought we ought to have a little room down that end because, you know, it just continues to get more baffling as you go. And so, you know, we kind of have, you know, driving the business, and then we have this thing that's just plain uncertainties that I couldn't list. And those are the things that would, you know, steer us to the low end of the range.
All right, so that's the answer I was looking for. So what that says is that there is buffer for events like natural disasters and things that are completely unknowable.
Yeah.
There's some in there, yes.
Yes, there is. Exactly right.
Okay, and there's probably, you know, maybe half of the downward guidance is related to the unknowable factors?
I don't do that.
Okay. All right. I'll take what I've got so far, which is helpful.
Okay.
The natural disaster comment definitely helps.
Okay.
Another specific question in order to help us gauge demand, you know, consulting bookings, once again, pretty respectable number for the environment. Can you comment on what's happened to contract duration in the consulting bookings that you just put up for us? Has duration changed one way or the other in any meaningful way?
No, Rod, this is Steve. No, it hasn't, just to answer your question directly. I mean, we have seen a bit of a shift to shorter durations on the outsourcing side, but nothing in consulting that's noteworthy.
Okay. All right. Great. And then I guess the question that is pretty important here to help people understand how you're putting these bookings up, I mean, there's clearly been a lot of decision delays out there, and it seems from your results that maybe your competitors are dealing with that more than you are. Can you talk to how are you able to navigate this environment where a lot of clients that are even looking at deals that have a high ROI on them are still unable to make the decision to move forward? You seem to have weathered that fairly well and are seemingly expecting to continue to weather that well. So how are you weathering that so well? If you can give color to help people understand that would be helpful.
Yeah, let me start. This is Bill, and then Steve can draft in with some things I missed. Because, you know, we look hard at this all the time. I mean, the first thing is, you know, I mean, I've been to a lot of clients the last few weeks, and if you've got something that'll deliver benefits in 2009, it's game on. You're going to get a chance to do it. And there's a lot of things in the, and, you know, if you look at Steve's comments about operational cost improvements and some of the outsourcing propositions and other things that are have 09 benefit, and if things have 09 benefit, I mean, you get a chance to do that. So we look very specifically, and we have an agenda we call C-suite themes, which are what are the things that people that have the C in their titles are thinking about in terms of doing the right thing for their business. And we've fundamentally, you know, shifted the offerings and the conversations and the things that we're doing to bring to the table. I think that is one. The second thing is the whole notion of what is the proposition about. And you know, value is an interesting thing. A modest ROI isn't going to put you over the goal line in this environment. It has to be a powerful and impactful and a sustainable one. And we've had clients with many $100 million jobs that have had leadership changes because of operating challenges, and they've stayed the course and moved ahead with propositions we've had on the table for 3 or 4 months because they generated real value for the long term. And as the client stands back and looks at its 2 and 3 year economic profile, they recognize that, you know, it takes a lot of work to get the benefits in place, and if you can and you can sustain them, it makes the math work. And so, you know, the fact that we can operate higher up the food chain in terms of C-suite themes, in terms of things that focus on near-term results, has served us very well. And we have had a wholesale transformation of our go-to-market agenda because in the end of the day, we're solving to be relevant. And relevant today isn't some large global thing with a 4 or 5 year payback. It's an impactful thing that delivers results that they can point at in 09, and that's how we've mobilized the team.
Rod, just to add, give you some context to add to what Bill said, over 70% of our bookings this quarter came from our foundation and diamond clients, those relationships that Bill alluded to. Almost 50% of our bookings were sole source. So, you know, you have evidence that basically, you know, the relationships and the value propositions that we're putting on the table are sustaining the growth. I mean, the clients are telling us they need industrial strength, they need our breadth, and they need someone that they can count on. And we've got the relationships to bring those value propositions forward, and the numbers show it.
Rod, I would just add one thing as it relates to outsourcing. As you know, the quarter was a little funny in terms of how late Thanksgiving fell. And so we did have a couple of, a few actually, outsourcing deals that pushed into this quarter, and all of the major ones have already signed. So I think, you know, we say outsourcing is lumpy, but that was something I was focused on just as an indicator.
Great. And one final question on the pricing front. There's a lot of different ways to define pricing, but let me just ask, is pricing a factor that you think will help, hurt, or keep your margins kind of neutral to fiscal 09?
I would say that it'll be neutral, at least from where I sit today, and I'll snap the line today, it will be neutral. As Pam pointed out in her comments, we were able to recoup the salary increases and will continue to drive savings from a labor standpoint throughout the year. That gives us pricing power. Do we have pricing pressure? Absolutely. Are clients interested in price adjustments? Absolutely. But we're also coming with different value propositions that allow us to expand our footprint and deliver more value to those same clients, Rod. So I would, at least today, just characterize it as neutral.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Rod.
Thank you, Rod.
And our next question comes from Julio Quinteros, Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. Can you go back, excuse me, to the 2001, 2002 time frame when we did see, you know, growth slow all the way down to zero, and compare that to the environment going into this recession this time around? Obviously, it feels a little bit more protracted and could be worse, et cetera. But how is the business different today? I guess, Bill or Steve, if you guys could kind of just start on what is different about the business so that we understand the sustainability of the growth targets that you guys are talking about now.
Yeah, Julio, I mean, let me start. I think, you know, we've been trying to articulate the last year or two how different the business is from 5, 6 years ago when we went through that. And the things we go through, you know, we continue to believe deeply. One is the long-term, the richness of the long-term relationships. The fact that we serve the clients in consulting, in technology building, and in outsourcing. Mm-hmm. The fact that we've sort of, work higher up the food chain. The global coverage. The nature of the work we do in terms of the value propositions and how we've woven ourselves into the fabric of the companies. If you stand back and just look at, outsourcing, the deep industry skills and all those things, we're just in a dramatically better position and different position than we were then. Now, we set out to get in that position. And I think the statistics that Steve described about, additional work sold to current clients and sole source work, speaks to that. I mean, we had a more fragile business back then than we do now. It's a lot more durable and industrial, and I think that's what served us well.
Got it. And then from the cost side, if you could talk a little bit about this. I know you've kind of given some of the targets as far as the margins are concerned, but with utilization and headcount plans, things along those lines, can you just kind of walk us through what you're looking at from the cost side as you think about the new margin targets into fiscal year 2009, the expansion that you're talking about? So if pricing is essentially net neutral to down, where are the other levers for the margin expansion going to come from?
Well, I mean, the supply and demand, which is Steve's department, is very much at the heart of making sure we deliver there, and we're all over it. You saw the utilization, and we've said that low to mid 80s is where we like it to be. So we're doing that, and as you know, there's many levers that go into managing that very well. I think on the other things, we're just driving contract profitability, and the thousands of people that run our contracts around the world, they have the levers available to them in terms of the mix of resources, types, levels, sourcing, all that jazz that goes into that. That's very important, and they're all focused on driving that. And then, of course, there's the non-labor things, what we do with travel, and what we do with all of the discretionary non-labor things, those costs and how we manage them, it just all goes into the mix.
And finally, just two quick things. What are the headcount plans then for the rest of fiscal 2009? Looks like quarter to quarter was relatively flat, but you guys had a huge fourth quarter last fiscal year. What are you guys thinking about for headcount plans going forward? And I guess I'll just get stuff to part of the last one.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Julio, there's a lot of factors that go into to answering that question, and they change on any given day. You saw our attrition was down significantly, right, from 17% down to 13%. So that obviously impacts how many people we have to bring in. That said, usually the fall is when we assimilate most of the people that we've made offers to and hired. We've been able to do that. We're going to continue to drive continue to drive utilization, as Pam said. And frankly, get these people busy. One other thing that I would point to that is impacting headcount is our industrialization agenda for both SI&T and outsourcing. And the reason that's important is because that drives lower labor costs and non-labor costs on our contracts. It obviously impacts our GDN. It will help our GDN grow. But you'll have puts and calls all over the world in different markets. So to try to throw out one projection today would be wrong tomorrow, given the movement in attrition and what we're seeing in terms of our industrialization agenda.
Got it. That's really helpful. One last thing, just on the offshore front, and last couple of quarters, last couple of years, has gotten a lot of attention. How relevant is offshore into this, or just pure labor arbitrage is how relevant is it into this downturn at this point? Because a lot of the things that you guys talked about on the other side didn't really have a labor arbitrage component to them. It sounded like it was a very different conversation in terms of what clients are expecting. So how are you thinking about that part of it, especially as it relates to your GDN efforts?
No, it's very relevant because clients that were not interested in outsourcing now are all of a sudden interested in having that conversation. They want to have it, they want to have it fast, and they want to implement results that are going to impact this fiscal year, this quarter. So obviously one of the tools that we have in the toolbox is to bring the GDN and our offshore capabilities to the table and make that part of the equation. So it's extremely relevant.
Got it. Great. Thank you.
And our next question comes from Moshe Katri, Cowen and Company. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks. In your guidance for constant currency growth, Pam, can you kind of help us understand what sort of embedded growth assumptions do you have for outsourcing versus consulting? And then also, I think Bill was indicating that the bid and proposal pipeline and outsourcing, I think Steve actually indicated that was pretty active. Can we get some more details on that? Thanks.
Well, Moshe, just in terms of your first question, I mean, we've told you that we expect our revenues to be roughly comparable in terms of what they've been in the recent past, consulting to outsourcing. So that's probably your best guideline for that answer.
And on the second part of your question, Moshe, you know, the conversations on this dramatic cost reduction are happening across every one of our operating groups. The conversations are around back office consolidation, and that impacts finance and accounting, procurement, HR, even industry specific BPO. So, you know, we're having these conversations again with clients who are interested in having dramatic cost savings impact on their operations as quickly as they can, and it really spans all of the service lines that we have in outsourcing.
Yeah, I would just add, Moshe, if I could. As I mentioned, it's been an interesting time this last quarter. But if we stand back from it, there's a lot of folks here, and I think if you talk to the outsourcing advising crowd, you'll find that, you know, there's been a period of indecision, and now it's starting to break loose. People are going to look for a constant a stable of providers. They're going to look for people that they have confidence in. They're not going to experiment with it. And we think the activity in the outsourcing space is just going to pick up in a dramatic, dramatic way. And what will be important to us is to make sure that you understand the opportunities that are good, economic, profitable opportunities for Accenture. I think there'll be plenty to do. I think the opportunity, you know, the challenge is going to be making sure you pick the business that delivers profit and build strength and long-term relationships. And, you know, that's what we're very focused on.
So based on the pipeline that you're seeing on the outsourcing side, obviously going back to the 2002-2003 time frame where consulting was down, I don't know, 5-6% a year, and then we've seen a huge pickup in outsourcing. I think it was up about 40% a year. Obviously, 40% is a pretty big number, but based on what you're seeing in your pipeline, should we see a dramatic pickup in outsourcing for the next year or two, given the environment and given, you know, the relevance of your services?
I think what we're going to see is what is a huge unqualified pipeline move to a very qualified pipeline of solid deals that we believe people are going to do. I think the thing that's different about that time is, if you remember that time, there were like three or four marquee deals that the whole world stood around and
yep.
looked at to see if, you know, they were going to be yes or no, and it was very binary. And if you look at the pipeline now, it doesn't have, I mean, it has some very big deals in it, but it has a lot of small and mid-sized deals, so the sort of the durability of it is a lot better. And frankly, these aren't the things where, you know, you're betting the whole thing on closing one deal. I mean, there's just a ton of things that can break your way every month. And so we feel dramatically better about the outsourcing pipeline and the activity that we see today than we did back then, where there were, you know, three or four big things and then a few cats and dogs. And, you know, you had to sort of play to win the big ones. I mean, right now there's just a lot more better, you know, better business out there for Accenture, in my opinion.
Great. Congratulations.
Thanks, Moshe.
And our next question comes from Tim Fox, Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Good afternoon. First question is related to Moshe's last question around outsourcing. And we've been hearing there's been some fairly competitive pricing going on at some points, getting pretty egregious. Just wondering, what's your stance right now on the competitive environment around outsourcing in particular, and do you think there's enough business out there of high enough quality and margin where you're not going to see a need to sort of go down market on pricing to sustain that growth?
Yeah, I guess I'd have two things. One is, and we talked about this today, we haven't seen, or at least we haven't been participating in deals that have had irrational bids. And so that's the first thing that we always look at, right? Do you just get out there and people are giving the stuff away? Because anybody can give the work away. We haven't seen a lot of that. I mean, we've seen very thoughtful things. But we do believe that there's going to be a lot of high-quality work that's coming our way, and I Accenture kind of outsourcing business, if you will, right? And I think we're blessed by having two things. One is that we've shed a lot of the gum on your shoe, right? I mean, our portfolio of business and the profitability of our outsourcing portfolio improves almost by the quarter, right? So, you know, there's some companies out there that have some real issues that, you know, you sort of drag around on your back. We don't have those right now. So I think that's the first thing. And the second thing is we've spent more time focused on operational excellence and the ability to make money at this stuff than we have piling on new sales the last 24 months. And so now, as the sales are, you know, coming in there, we have the ability to have the predictable quality output that makes money. And the whole industrialization agenda, the things that Carl Heinz and Kevin have talked about, you know, are just essential. And I think it's payback time in terms of good economic returns for that business for our company.
Okay, great. That's helpful. And if I may, just a question about two verticals. The products group, you know, an amalgamation of many different verticals, was quite strong in fiscal 08. I believe it was 17% local currency growth. It was 9 this past quarter. If you peel back the cover a little bit on products, is there anything in there that gives you some concern around growth? Any particular verticals that you may see soften more than others? And did that have any impact on your thinking about the lowered guidance?
Tim, this is Steve. You know, the two I'd point out are two that you'd probably guess yourself. Retail and automotive, right, have been challenged. That said, you know, I think the growth was respectable this time, and because it was offset by good growth in health and life sciences and consumer goods and services and transportation and travel services. So, you know, our leadership kind of runs this as a portfolio. There's always going to be some industries that are down and some industries that are up. But the two that I mentioned are the two you'd probably guess were a little soft this quarter anyway.
Okay. And just lastly, if I may, obviously resources on the commodity side, things have been in turmoil. You put up another very strong quarter for resources. Is there any concern there that there may be some softening as those industries start to, you know, feel the impact of what's going on globally?
I think we're going to see a shift. You know, we've seen strong consulting growth in resources for a while. The guys that lead that organization for us would tell you that the conversations in the last 6 weeks have shifted over to outsourcing in an incredibly quick way. So I think the demand is still going to be there. We have to obviously go out and shape and capture it, but the conversations have shifted from consulting more to outsourcing.
Great. Thank you. Congratulations on the call.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Brian Keane, Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi. I'm at the end of the call, so I'll try to keep it 25 questions for you guys.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Anything else, Brian.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, any outsourcing deferrals or cancellations? And I guess that question could be for consulting, deferrals or cancellations.
Nothing that would point to a trend.
Okay, and then when you guys talk about the uncertainty is kind of the reason why you've taken the range down, you know, I would think that the bookings have been strong enough that you have pretty good visibility for the next couple of quarters. So would it have to be cancellations or deferrals that would cause that uncertainty?
Well, the uncertainty stuff is, you can almost hardly describe it, right? But there's just like a surprise a week going on out there in different industries and for different companies. And so you just say to yourself, just every day you just take the paper and look through it and you'll just say, whoa, right? And that's what we're saying, right? We're just standing back from this thing and saying, you know, geez. You know, that said, we have some of those, you know, some of those companies in there are companies where, you know, we're launching new work, right? That's, you know, going to help them in a dramatic way. But the uncertainty stuff is just hard to put your finger on. It just continues to surprise you, and sooner or later you say, you know, I'm sure there's something out there that I'm not thinking of. And you know, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
Okay, and Bill, when you talk about decisions starting to loosen up or people starting to make some decisions, I assume you're talking about outsourcing, but is that true with consulting as well?
Well, I guess I was describing it more in the outsourcing context, but absolutely, it is with consulting, except, you know, the consulting decisions, you know, a lot of the sort of new work is early stage, right? A lot of, like, if you look at a lot of the things that are going on in financial services, right, it's envision and architect kind of work, right? It's sort of a new platform for this, a new capability to do that, a new way of how we're going to take these, you know, two banks and merge them together and have them operate as one. So in that sense, there is some breakthrough. It just doesn't have the size and the scale of the outsourcing work.
Okay, and then just finally, two questions for Pam. I guess operating margins are expected to be higher for the year than your guidance just last quarter. And I guess it just sounds like you're pulling levers because the FX pressure has been higher. Is that fair to say, or is there something specific that surprised you in the last 3 months?
No, it's not just the FX, I mean, for sure. I mean, I think that at the root of it, right, it wasn't like the drag was so great this quarter, and we delivered very strong operating margins. So I think the way we're delivering is there's just been a steady improvement. And part of it is you want to make sure that that's going to be sustained. And we analyze this quite a bit to make sure that we believe that we will sustain that, or we expect we will, over the balance of the year to lead to the expansion.
Okay, and then just the other one was on interest income. I know that was four cents or so lower. Does that, should we still expect interest income to be a lot lower going forward, given where rates have gone?
Yeah, I mean, that 4 cents was the total of non-operating stuff. And actually, the interest income was about a penny. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not about to go out and introduce a lot more risk to try to get some interest income someplace. I mean, there's just not a lot to get.
And most of the interest income is derived from international?
No. I mean, we put most of our cash in treasuries. I mean, I would say it's mostly not international.
Okay. All right, great. Congratulations. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Operator, we have time for one more question.
Great. And that question would be from David Grossman, Thomas Weisel. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Just very quickly, I know there's been a lot of questions about the margins. You took them up, you know, 400 basis points. You know, Pam, should we look at this as a new plateau going forward, or really, you know, something that reflects, you know, strong cost controls in a very difficult period?
I would say that it's mostly the former. I mean, I think that that we are really trying to improve the margins in this business and sustain it. And I think we've been on that trajectory. This is probably a little bit of a steeper uplift that we're signaling right now than we have in the past. But nonetheless, I think if you look at our results, what we've done with SG&A over the years and this focus on contract profitability, I mean, this is what we're looking to do.
And just one other question is on currency. I think on your last call, and I may have misunderstood it, you said a 1% change in currency impacts EPS by a penny. I guess, did I understand that correctly, and is that still a good assumption?
Well, I mean, I think that it's not just currency, but when you kind of take into account everything else that's happening with that kind of a move with currency, then that's about what it would be, but I wouldn't take that too literally. I was just trying to give you a feel.
Okay, and just finally, what is the measurement date, if you will, for the currency rates that you're using in your guidance? Is that the current spot rates, or was that a rate, you know, at the end of the quarter, or an average quarter to date?
Well, what I mentioned for December was actually a rate that we used that did get set at the beginning of the month, the 11%. And then what we did for the remaining guidance was to say, well, gee, how have currencies moved during December? and then try to factor in how that looks if we then factored that into our results for the remaining three quarters and compared them to last year, that's the drag that we would see.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Well, let me just say a couple things in closing, if I can. First of all, we've started fiscal 2009 with another strong quarter, especially in light of what's happening in the global economy. We are very positive about our business and remain committed to protecting our profitability, strengthening our global franchise, and further differentiating Accenture from the competition. The durability and diversity of our business serves us well. We have a unique business model, and we continue to operate it with tremendous discipline and flexibility. Particularly in these challenging times, we are dedicated to staying close and relevant to our clients and remain keenly focused on helping them achieve high performance. And just as important, we remain committed to high performance in our own business so that we can continue to deliver exceptional value to our shareholders. In closing, I'd once again like to thank the 187,000 men and women of Accenture, without whom none of this would be possible. Thank you very much for joining us on the call today. We appreciate your continued support, and we wish all of you a happy holiday season and all the best for the new year.
And ladies and gentlemen, this conference will be available for replay after 7 p.m. today through midnight, January 2nd, 2009. You may access the teleconference replay system at any time by dialing 1-800-475-6701 and entering the access code 970592. International participants dial 320-365-3844. Those numbers again are 1-800-475-6701 and 320-365-3844, access code 970592. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T Executive Teleconference. You may now disconnect.